Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. Welcome to the second of our three-part series with Rabbi Adler in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. And we welcome back. And for part two of the Rav on Yom Kippur, I just posted the link to the source sheet. You should have gotten an email. Bakasha, Rabbi Adler.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kelman. Erev Tov from Yerushalayim and Tzaraim Tovim, good afternoon or early afternoon. Or late morning, whatever it may be, North America. I think this whole project puts a new emphasis in what we say, min ha'olam v'ad ha'olam, that we can somehow spread the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu from one world to the next. And this can be done instantaneously, which is quite an accomplishment. Last week, we dealt with some ideas of the Rav on Kol Nidre night. And today we're moving over to the daytime of Yom Kippur. Next week we'll deal with the evening of Nila. And basically we have Tfilat Shacharit and Tfilat Musaf. We will deal primarily today with the Tfilat Musaf and the core section of Tfilat Musaf. I recall growing up as a child with sitting next to my father, Olav Shalom, just the past yesterday was his 6th yard site. He always would remark that the Chazanim on Yom Kippur would spend an awful lot of time, let's use the Yiddish word, gorgling, to giving out their Chazanut, on various sections of the poetry of the Machzor, which is all fine and dandy. But when it came to the section of the Avodah, the service of the Kohen Gadol in the Beit HaMikdash, where the Chazan is reenacting to a certain degree, that which took place in the Beit HaMikdash, there were Chazanim who just put their heads down and stepped on the gas and went full speed ahead with very, very little to say out loud during the section of the Avodah. And it was only when they got to the section of the Asara Harugei Malchut, the 10 martyrs, then the Chazanim would perk up again with all kinds of cantorial pieces. To the Rav, this was obviously a complete misguided type of understanding of the Machzor, to the extent that the Rav believed that the Avodah, the section in the Musaf of Yom Kippur, that the Chazan is now going to reenact, as I say, the Avodah, the service of the Kohen Gadol, which was unique in the Beit HaMikdash, once a year, by one person. It was a solo activity going on here. The Chazan, at least in the Rav's Beit Midrash in the Maimonides School in Boston, the Chazan had to say the entire Avodah out loud, word by word. So I can imagine that this section took some time. And in the Rav's Beit Midrash, he was never concerned with a break between Musaf and Mincha. The Rav actually believed that on Yom Kippur, there's no room for a break. And the proof is that, and I may have mentioned this incidentally at the end of the shir last week, there's no Aleinu L'Shabeach, neither after Shacharit, nor Musaf, nor Mincha, and nor Nila. Because when you're going automatically into the next tefillah, you're not leaving the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in prayer. And hence, Aleinu L'Shabeach serves the function of a release, requesting permission. In the halachic jargon, the briskers used to call it a matir, that which allows you to do something, to leave the audience of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And this we do not do any Shabbat between Shacharit and Musaf, or on Yom Tov, or on Rosh Chodesh, because we're going into the next tefillah automatically, so there's no exit strategy. Yet on Yom Kippur, there's no Aleinu L'Shabeach after Shacharit, Musaf, Mincha, and Nila. And there's a gentleman in my shul here in Katamon, Yerushalayim, who very correctly pointed out that now that we do have some type of a break, and if we're finishing Musaf and Yom Kippur at 1:32 p.m. and not getting to Mincha until 4 p.m., should we not say Aleinu L'Shabeach before leaving the shul? And I said, you're right, and we're not going to do it. Because, you're right, the point is well taken, but we're not going to do it because the Rav was very, very, very careful about not making any, introducing new things into the machzor, either add-ons or deletions, although he himself occasionally fine-tuned certain tefillot, but certainly to add on an Elein L'Shabach that's not officially in the machzor, I didn't want to do it. So this series has something to do with the Rav's experience of Yom Kippur. And it leads me to quote a few lines what the Rav himself said about Yom Kippur as a child. And the context is trying to sense the sensation, the feeling of Kiddusha, of holiness in this world. The Rav believed, and he writes this in Ish Halacha, Halachic Man, the descent of divinity into the midst of our concrete world, this is the sensation of Kiddusha. So the Rav said as follows, as a child, I keenly felt the Kiddushas Hayom, the Rav spoke in Ashkenazis, the Kiddushat, the sanctity of the day of Yom Kippur. He keenly felt the Kiddushah. The holiness of Yom Kippur was not merely a phrase. It was an experience. I do not know how to adequately relate. The enthusiasm, the ecstasy, the recognition of this holiness reached its pinnacle at the Avodah. This, for the Rav, was a climactic moment in the davening of Yom Kippur. Of all the five davenings of Yom Kippur, Arvit at night, Shacharit, Musaf, Mincha, and Nila. On Rosh Hashanah, for example, the central point of the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah are the three add-ons, Malchiyot, Zichronot, Shofarot, those selections of Psukim that deal with the monarchy of God, the coronation of God in this world, the memories of various stations of Am Yisrael, and when the shofar was introduced on different occasions, historically, as well as for the days to come in the Messianic times. So that's what Rosh Hashanah is. But Yom Kippur, the central part, is the Avodah. And to prove the point that this is really the central part, and not only the Rav's feeling, we have an interesting introduction, both on Rosh Hashanah to the section of Malchiyot Zechronot Shofarot and to the Avodah Yom Kippur, which begins with Ochila La'el Achalef Anav. Today there are some remarkably beautiful, moving tunes that accompany Ochila La'el Achalef Anav. And these lines are a special petition by the Chazan. I'm now getting into the meat of what this Shmoneh Esrei is all about, be it Malchiyot Zichronot Shofarot on Rosh Hashanah, be it the Avodah on Yom Kippur, and I'm asking the Kadosh Baruch Hu to guide me, to put the right words in my mouth. Hashem Sfatai Tiftach Ufi Yagid Tilatecha. To be fair, in the Machzor of the Eidot HaMizrach, those who have the traditions of North Africa or Spain, or from Bavel, we call Yadut Bavli, and so on, they have the same ochila, except that it precedes the chazarat hashatz. Instead of the chazan simply saying Hashem svatai tiftach, ufi yagit yilatecha, like he might do throughout the year, it's expanded with this ochila la'el achalef anav. But Ashkenazim have it in the middle of the chazarat hashatz, preceding the core issues of what the tefillah is all about. And it's the avodah. Now, the Beit HaMikdash is not here. So why bother going through all the details of what exactly happened in the Beit HaMikdash, and to really understand and comprehend not only the general picture, but also the very, very detailed description of what happened and try to understand each detail? This would be way beyond the scope of a talk. Right now, within the hour, we need many, many hours. So I'm going to tell you that one of the first times that I heard the Rav in the Rav Shir, back in 1974, so the Rav told us that before Yom Kippur, instead of teaching the regular Gemara, He said he's going to give 3 shiurim on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And he said, bring the following svarim. A Gemara Masechet Yoma, which is the Masechet that deals with Beit HaMikdash activities on Yom Kippur. Bring a Rambam Hilchot Avodat Yom Kippurim, the Mishnah Torah section of the Rambam that deals with these halachot. And bring 2 machzorim, a Nusach Svard and a Nusach Ashkenaz. And the reason was that if one is familiar with the Avodah section, now some printers actually did us a favor and printed both. But in the Nusach Ashkenaz, there's a very difficult medieval poem written by one of the Kolonimus famous Paitanim, Amitz Koach. It takes us back to creation of the world and deals with Adam and his sin, and it moves on to the next generation, moves on to Noach, and moves on to Abraham Avinu, and moves on to Yitzchak and Yaakov, and it brings us all the way down to Aharon HaKohen, to Shevet Levi, and then to Aharon HaKohen, and here we are, Aharon HaKohen, who's the Kohen Gadol, and now any particular Kohen Gadol. Nusach Svard also begins with creation of the world. It begins with Atakonanta, and the Hebrew is much easier to understand, and this is very typical of the difference between the Ashkenazi and Sephardi poetry that we have in the Slichot, for example, where the Sephardi Slichot are generally comprehensible to anybody who has a fairly good knowledge of Hebrew, and the Ashkenazi, you can be an expert in Hebrew and break your teeth over the words and not understand what you're saying in the various poems of Slichot, or the Kinot for that matter, on Tisha B'Av. And that's what the Amitz Koach is. And what the Rav does is he contrasts the halachic positions of the Rambam representing the Sephardi tradition of how the Kohen Gadol did the service with Rabbeinu Tam, who's Rashi's grandson, representing the Ashkenazi tradition. So how did the Mr. Kohen Gadol do the service in the Beit HaMikdash? The answer is we don't have a clue. He either did it this way or that way. So if the Kohen Gadol's grandfather came from Germany or Hungary or Poland, he most probably was an Amitz Koach man. And if the Kohen Gadol stemmed from North Africa or Spain, he did it the Atakonanta. Of course, I'm not serious about that. We don't know what went on in Beit HaMikdash. And the Rav said, what went on in Beit HaMikdash was a factor of the Sanhedrin, the Beit Din HaGadol, the high Supreme Court that sat in Beit HaMikdash, and halachically decided for every generation how the Avodah was supposed to take place. And as the Torah says in Parshat Shoftim, Uvatat el Kohen bel Shofet, Asher Giyed by Yemei Mahem, you go to the judges of your generation, and Chazal say, what do you think? You're going to go to the judge of your great-grandfather? It says, Ein lecha el Shofet shebederecha, you have your judges in your generation, and you follow them. Do not make a detour left or right. Whatever they tell you to do, you do. And unfortunately, with the collapse of the authority of the Sanhedrin, the views remained views, and they surface in the halachic literature of the Middle Ages, the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Tam saying one thing, and Rashi and Rambam saying something else. And in the poetry, these views are reflected. So you can imagine the greatness of the Rav going through the poems of the Atakonanta, the Sephardi, and the Amitz Koach, the Ashkenazi, and what he has in his head are the views, the halachic views that are found in the Tosfot in Masechet Yoma and the Rambam in Hilchot Avodat Yom Kippurim. And I will tell you as follows, each shiur that week was 3 to 3.5 hours long. One went actually 4 hours. When the 3 shiurim were finished, it was almost 10 hours of learning. The Rav closes all the Sfarim, and he does a review, an oral review of every single thing he said in those 10 hours. He says, now let us see what Mr. Kohen Gadol, Ishi Kohen Gadol, as the Chazal call him, Mr. Kohen Gadol, sir, what did you do from morning to night? And he goes through it point by point, by heart. In accordance with this view, according to Rabbeinu Tam, you do this now, according to Rambam, you do that now. And he goes on, and he finishes. And the Rav breaks out in a big smile. And he says, will you please invite Ishi Kohen Gadol in? because I finally figured out what I'm going to do in the third Beit HaMikdash. I'm going to be the private tutor for the Kohen Gadol, for the Avoda. I'm going to teach him. The Rav was so satisfied and content that he had a handle on the material, he felt he would be qualified to teach the Kohen Gadol and guide him what to do. And this came against the background of the Rav coming from a family who are Levim. His great-grandfather was known as the Beit HaLevi. Soloveitchiks were Levim. And the name Soloveitchik, by the way, is Nightingale. And Nightingale is a singing bird. And here in Israel, we had a president of the Supreme Court who was born Soloveitchik, changed his name, Hebraicized it to Zamir, which comes from the word Zemer. So the Soloveitchiks were singers. And the Levim were the singers in the Beit HaMikdash. Except as the Rav said many times over, and I personally can confirm this, the Rav was not blessed with musical talents, and he knew it. So he said that he would not be in the choir or the orchestra of the Beit HaMikdash. So he's trying to figure out, what is he going to do in the third Beit HaMikdash? Well, there was another task, to be the honor guard, like a doorman of sorts, but an honor guard. And the Rav said, Zakein velo lefi chvodi. The status that he had as a Talmud Chacham, it would not have been appropriate for him to stand there at the gates of Beit HaMikdash. What you might say in Yiddish is pastnished. It's not appropriate. He actually felt that this wasn't for him. And he was groping for a task in the third Beit HaMikdash, and he found it. He's going to be the private tutor of the Kohen Gadol and teach him how to do the Avodah. Now, there's an interesting detail that happens in the Beit HaMikdash with regard to the Avodah, and that is there is a ceremonial reading of the Torah of the Avodah itself. Now that we read it because we don't have Beit HaMikdash, fine, we have Kriyat HaTorah, we read it. That we say it in Musaf, fine, we don't have Beit HaMikdash. Why exactly did the Kohen Gadol, after he finishes everything, almost everything that had to be done, there was a moment that he takes a step out of the bounds of the main part of Beit HaMikdash, and he starts reading the Torah. So from where do we know that we actually have an obligation to read the section of the Avodah? So it's interesting. The Gemara makes reference in Masechet Yoma, it's Daf Lamed Vav Amud Bet, 36b. And the Gemara talks about the order of confession. Now we know that there are three different categories of sins. There is Chet, Avon, and Pesha. Each one representing a different degree of responsibility. Deliberate, accidental, with thought, without thought, as a type of rebellious act against God. So the order of the vidui, the confession, the Gemara tells us, how did the Kohen Gadol say vidui? Or how should we say vidui on Yom Kippur? The Gemara says, Ketzad mitvadeh, we say, aviti, I sinned, pashati, I sinned, v'chatati, and I sinned. That is, I translated sin, sin, sin. But obviously, avon, pesha, and chet are three different things that the Gemara is going to tell us what the differences are. And the Gemara says, why should our vidui take place in this sequential order of avon, pesha, and chet? He said, because the sa'ir ha-mishtaleach, that goat that was going to be sent to the Judean desert and thrown off the cliff. So before that happened, the Kohen Gadol had to confess in the name of all of Klal Yisrael. V'chein b'sa'ir ha-mishtaleach. It says, v'tvade alav et kol avonot b'nei Yisrael, avon, v'et kol pishehem, the psha'im, l'chol chatotam. So in that pasuk, you have an order, avon, pesha, and chet. Now, remember when we say al chet, we say, v'yakulam eloha slicho, slach lanu, michal lanu, kaper lanu. Each one has an antidote. There's mechila, slicha, and kapara, that correspond to Chet, Avon, and Pesha. If you want to know which one goes where, open up Musaf on Rosh Chodesh, where it says, Limchilat Chet, Lislichat Avon, and then there's a third, which our custom is only to say it in a leap year, Ulechaparat Pasha. And that's a shir in itself, have that happened. But in the original version of the Tefillah of Rosh Chodesh, you had all three. So each one has its own word that dictates atonement, and there are three different ways of sinning. So this is what Rabbi Meir says. That's why in our private vidui, we should say it in this this sequential order. Aviti, Pashati, Chatati. Chachamim argue. And they say, no, avonot are these donot, are those sins that are performed deliberately. And he brings a pasuk, and then he says, pshaim, even worse, that's mardim, mered. Mered means rebellious act against God. But then he says, and the chait, that's the shogeg. Shogeg means inadvertent. You did a sin, but it was inadvertent. You forgot that it was Shabbat. And you know, you put the lights on, you forgot. You didn't do it deliberately, an act that is completely not deliberate at all. So the Rabbi Chachamim say, after you've said confession on these donot and the merid on the more serious ones, then you're going to go back and you're going to say vidui on the shogeg. It's just not right. It's out of sync. You know, work your way up. Start with the shogeg, with the inadvertent, then work your way up to the more serious. So Chachamim have it the other way, and they say you were supposed to say chatati aviti pashati lefanecha ani uveti. And by the way, that's the way the Rambam says it in the laws of tshuva, the formula for tshuva. Then the Gemara tells us a story. Hahu dinachit kamei deraba. There was a bal tefila. There was a chazan by the great Amora Rabbah in Bavel. And he, when he said the Avodah in Musaf, Avad ki Rabbi Meir, he did it in the order of Rabbi Meir. And that was the order of Aviti, Pashati, Bechatati. Amar le, the Chachamim said, Shafka Rabbanan ve'avadet ki Rabbi Meir. You left the Chachamim on the side and you picked a single opinion. You have to realize this is serious business, because there's a concept called Yachid v'Rabim, Halacha k'Rabim. If there's a majority opinion, and that's given by the name the Chachamim against Rabbi Meir, the Halacha is in accordance with Chachamim. Nobody's giving you a choice here. So how did you just leave the Chachamim's view and you adopted Rabbi Meir? Amar le, so Rabbi Meir responded, the reason that this Shliach Tzibur, why did he do the way he did it? Why did he do it like Rabbi Meir? He says, because that's the way it's in the Chumash. It's in the Sefer Oraita de Moshe. It's in the book of Moshe. That's the order. What do you want from me? It says, Vitvadu alav et avonot, vit kol pishayem, l'chol chatotam. Okay, so the Chachamim said what they said. But I have a source. Rabbi Meir didn't just say it, you know, out of the head. That is just thought it up. He's got a good source. So I'm standing on very solid ground here. So Rashi tells us, what does it mean? Hahu dinachit kamei deraba. There was one gentleman who's standing in front of Rabba. What does this mean? Rashi says, fills in the blanks for us. Shliach tzibur, he was a chazan. Shemisader b'tfilato shel yom kippurim, seder avodotav shel kohen gadol, who orders, who's saying the reenacting, the avodah, the service of the Kohen Gadol, as part of the tefillah, in the name of a pasuk in Hosea, Unishalma Parim Svateinu. The pasuk Unishalma Parim Svateinu, we're going to read it in the Haftorah for Parsha B'Shuva, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Unishalma Parim Svateinu, we will pay the debt of our animal sacrifices with our lips. And this is important halacha, that when we study, read the sections of halacha that deal with korbanot, we ask that a Kadosh Baruch Hu should accept that reading as if we actually went through the process of bringing the korban. And in a moment we'll see there is actually a basis for this. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Megillah, Daf Lamed Aleph, and it's a little bit of a dialogue between Avram Avinu and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's at the Brit Bein Haptarim, that famous covenant, the scene of the covenant, where really Kadosh Baruch Hu and Avram Avinu cut the deal of the covenant for generations to come until this very day. But it's very interesting that Avraham Avinu asked the question, he poses the question, okay, fine, so God's promising to Avraham Avinu that your generations are going to inherit Eretz Yisrael. And Avraham Avinu is asking for some concrete proof. You know, you want to sign on the dotted line somewhere? I want something in the hand. So there is a Gemara Masechet Nedarim, Daf Lamed Bet, that suggests that Avraham Avinu was actually punished for that kind of question. But here, the Gemara doesn't set it up as a punishment at all. It sets it up as a dialogue. Amar Avraham Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avraham says to God, Ribono Shel Olam, Shema Chas V'Shalom Yisrael Chot'im Lefanecha, V'ata Oseh Lahem Kedor HaMabulu, Kedor HaPlaga. Fine, so you promised me Eretz Yisrael, but what if my descendants sin, and then you're going to decide to end it all with them, like you did with the generation of the flood, or the generation of the Dor HaPlaga, where everybody was mixed up and so on. Great punishments can happen. And Avraham Avinu was quite worried. Amar Lo, Kadosh Baruch Hu responds to Avraham, Lav, no, that won't happen. Amar Lefanav, so Avraham said, Ribono Shel Olam, Bama'ida, how do I know? How do I know that won't happen? So Amar Lo, God says, Khali Egla Mishuleshet, the Ayil Mishulash, take the animals, the calf, and the birds, and we're going to go through a very, very strange sacrifice of cutting them in the middle, and you're going to walk between them. And this is a sacrifice. The sacrifice is going to be the tangible sign, the contract, if you may, that this Brit, this covenant, is here to stay. So Avraham Avinu follows, and he says, Amar Lefana Rabbono Shel Olam, that's really fine. Tenach, that's fine. Bizman Shebeit HaMikdash Kayam, when the temple, the Beit HaMikdash, is up and running and functioning. Bizman She'ein Beit HaMikdash Kayam, Mati Alehem, what's going to happen with Am Yisrael after the destruction? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, Amar Lo, Kvar Tikanti Lahem Seder Korbanot. I've arranged for Am Yisrael the text of the Korbanot. Kolzman Shekoim Bahen, as long as they're studying, reading and studying it, Ma'aleh Ani Alehem, Ke'ilu Makrivim Lefanai Korban, I will consider it as if they've offered the sacrifices, Umochel Ani Al Kol Avonatehem, and I will atone and forgive for all their sins. You have here an agadic basis for the understanding of Unishalma Parim Svatenu. We pay the debts of our animal sacrifices, the oxen, or whatever the animal should have been, in accordance with the book of Vayikra. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu is willing to accept it. And he accepts it because our lips are reading and affirming these mitzvot as well. So this is really what Rashi is saying, that is why the Chazan goes through the motion of the Avodah. For in essence, he is the Kohen Gadol for this particular community. So while when there was Beit HaMikdash, there was only one Bayit and one Kohen Gadol, I'll say parenthetically, there was an attempt in the Second Temple era to set up a competitive temple on Egyptian soil in Alexandria, and was known as the House of Chonyo, and there was a skirmish of two brothers who was going to become the Kohen Gadol, a political issue, and unfortunately, they set up a competitive Mikdash on Egyptian soil. But today, we don't have Beit HaMikdash, but we have what's known as Mikdash Me'at, miniature Beit HaMikdash, and that's a Beit Knesset. So we have a miniature Kohen Gadol who's playing the role, he's functioning as the Kohen Gadol for the particular community. And therefore, he is going to perform the Avodah with his lips. Now, this makes sense according to the view that we only add the section of the Avodah in Musaf, which is our Machzah. And I'm not here to scare you, just to teach you that there's another view out there. And that's a view mentioned in the days of the Geonim. It's found in the collection called the Otsar HaGeonim. And that the Avodah was to be included not only into Musaf, but into every davening of Yom Kippur. So we have five davenings on Yom Kippur: Arvit, Ma'ariv, Shacharit, Musaf, Mincha, and Nila. Do you have any idea how long the davening now becomes expanded if we would have had to include, incorporate the Avodah section into all the other tefillot? A very parallel machloket, by the way, exists with regard to Malchiyot, Zechronot, Shofarot on Rosh Hashanah. There is a view of the Baal HaMa'or, his name was Rabbi Yisrachya HaLevi, a 12th century from southern France, from Provence, who was of the opinion that the inclusion of Malchiyot, Zechronot, Shofarot on Rosh Hashanah is to be done in every single Shmon Esrei of Rosh Hashanah. We don't hold like that opinion, and because that would also may expand the chakras, the Ma'ariv, the chakras, and the Mincha, as we have it in Musaf. But with regard to Yom Kippur, there is a view out there. And the Rav was concerned. What's behind that kind of a view? We understand the view that we practice. It's only in Musaf, because it's Musaf, which is the tefillah that reenacts the korban, the sacrifice. That's what Musaf is all about, whether it's on Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, or in any other Yom Tov. So no different for Yom Kippur. But why would we mention the Avodah in Arvit and Shacharit and in Mincha and Nila? Why? The Rav had only one possible answer, and that the Avodah represented the sanctity of the day. The sanctity of the day. It goes beyond the concept of Korban and reenacting that which went on in Beit HaMikdash. If you ask, what is Yom Kippur? The Rav would say it's personified, explained by the Avodah. And hence when we say in Ma'ariv and Shacharit and Mincha and Nila, Vatitin lanu Hashem lokenu be'avat yom ha-kippurim hazeh, God has given us Yom Kippur, limchila, l'slicha u'l'chapara, v'limchol bo et kol avonoteinu, we would have to expand on this with the Avodah. The Avodah is that which is the agent that grants us limchila, slicha, and chapara, relevant terms for all the tefillot of Yom Kippur. And hence, the Rav felt it would be attached to the definition of the Kiddushat Hayom, the sanctity of the day. So even though we don't do that, we only have the Avodah in the Musaf section, the Rav nevertheless sensed through the readings of the Avodah the essence of the Kiddushat Hayom, the sanctity of the day. So what did the Kohen Gadol do? Well, he did so much. You open the machzor, you'll see he did so much. But at one point, he goes through the lottery. There's a goral. And there is a Mishnah. If you have the source page, it's on Mishnah number 7. I'm reading from the 6th chapter of the Mishnah of Masechet Yoma. And it says, Shnei Se'irei Yom HaKippurim. There were two goats that were brought before the Kohen Gadol. Mitzvatan, the proper way to do this, Sheyu Shnehem, Shavin B'mara U'Bekoma U'Bedamim, U'Lekichikachtan Ke'echad. They should look identical. They should be the identical height. They should have the identical monetary value. And they should have been purchased at the same time. The Mishnah goes on and says, well, what if we didn't buy it at the same time? How do we deal with this? Okay, but the mitzvatan means this is the real way to do this. We're talking about Siamese twins here. We're talking about two goats that you couldn't pick them apart. They just looked identical. And then the Kohen Gadol goes through this motion of drawing lots. On one, it says Lashem, with the Shem HaMafurash, with the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. And the other one, it says La'azazel, it's going to the desert. And which he puts up the first one, and on his right hand, and it says Lashem, puts it on the right-hand goat. If it came up La'azazel, he'd put it on the right one as well. And the other one is Lashem, one is Lazazel. Lashem means that Sa'ir is going to be dealt with as a korban, and it's being offered inside the Kodesh Kodeshim, the Holy of Holies. The blood is going to be brought into the Holy of Holies, something that's not done throughout the year, only on Yom Kippur. The second one is going to be dealt with in a most cruel fashion by being led by a messenger of the Kohen Gadol, an Ish Iti, and brought to the desert, and then thrown off a cliff. And the Mishnah even describes the goriness of that sa'ir, that goat, rolling down the mountain, being broken up limb by limb. Ad shenasa evarim evarim, says the Mishnah. What is this all about? So there's a Rabban in Chumash, in Parshat Achrei Mot, he says a remarkable idea. He says this is a korban to the Satan. To the Satan, and that's a shear in itself. The Rav dealt with this. What does it mean, a korban to the Satan? Why are we doing this? But the Rav had an interesting idea. There was once a commercial back in the States. I'm going back now to the late 50s and 60s. It was a mint candy called Certs. You can nod your head if it still exists on the shelf. And it was a mint that had two different flavors. And the commercial had a man holding the round package of the Certs, and he would bang his hands together, and he would say, Certs, Certs, two Certs in one. His hand would converge, and it would become one package of these mint candies, two Certs in one. And I always remember that scene. I don't know why. But the Rav actually said, you know what the two Se'irim are, the two goats? It's two goats in one. They are identical, and they should be seen as one. And it represents every single person of Am Yisrael. Every single person is represented by that one goat who has a split personality. One part of the personality wants to go Lashem, to be as close as possible to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And on this physical world, you cannot get closer than in the Kodesh Kodeshim, the Holy of Holies, on Yom Kippur in the Beit HaMikdash. And the other wants to run away from anything that's holy. And that's the symbol of the Sa'ir La'azazel, to the desert, to the emptiness of Kedusha, of holiness, where the sinner represents by his neshama, what happens to his soul by sinning, it also rolls down the mountain and gets broken up. And the force of gravity brings him down. And there's just no way for him to catch himself any longer. Whether the Jew is on his way into the Beit HaMikdash and the Kodesh Kodeshim, whether the Jew is on his way to the Midbar, the desert of emptiness, is a function of your hand. Your hand. This drawing of the lots was not a lottery of who's going to win the sweepstakes. This drawing of the lots was the Bechira Chofshit. It was the free will of every Jew. Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz miyirat shamayim. Everything is determined by God. And Rashi there in Masechet Brachot, where this saying is mentioned, it says, hakol, what is everything? Well, whether you're going to have a genetic disposition to grow tall or short, whether you're going to have this personality or that personality, whether you were born into a certain social setting, we did nothing. Your person was born into a royal family. Person was born into a very a destitute family. You did nothing when you were born. You were just born into it. Kadosh Baruch Hu places you into a particular setting, and it gives you talents and gives you intelligence. All this is from God. Hakol bidei shamayim. So what's left? Where's the free choice? The free choice is to determine, am I taking myself with whatever talents I have, Lashem? Or am I going to waste it, La'azazel? And the Kohen Gadol is making that choice for us. And he's showing us that these two Se'irim, these two goats, are really one goat. It's each and every one of us. And the hand of the Kohen Gadol is going to say, is it Lashem or La'azazel? It's like each and every one of us making that choice on Yom Kippur as well. And the great hope is that we're going to make the choice Lashem. And then there's a little bit of a break in the action, because the Ish Iti, the messenger of the Kohen Gadol, he didn't have a helicopter to take him from Har HaBayit out to the Judean desert. That could have taken maybe 10 minutes by flight on a helicopter today, but he had to walk. And the Mishnah tells us that at various stations on the way, they had booths, Sukkot booths. We call it butgalach. There were booths that had food there. Because this Ish Itay, even though it was Yom Kippur, he had to get that job done. He couldn't faint. He couldn't drop from dehydration. He was allowed to eat and get to the place where he was going to throw that sa'ir, that goat, off the cliff. He's going to have to eat. But the Gemara tells us he never did. He never did. So why did they have the food there anyway? Eino domeh mi sheyesh lo sat b'salo. No, it's a psychological idea. If you know the food is there, then you can carry on to the next station because you know the food is going to be there. But in fact, he remained fasting until the end. And there was some type of signal when the Ish Iti arrived at the station in the desert. And the Kohen Gadol is now going to engage, not in the continuation of the service, because there's some time here. I don't want to say, God forbid, to kill. Nobody's killing time. He's going to utilize the time for Kriyat HaTorah. And he leaves the Temple Mount. He leaves the Beit HaMikdash and leaves part of the area of the Temple Mount for the area that's known as the Ezrat Nashim. Now, let's not get confused. On Yom Kippur, it was not full of women. There were no women there at the time at the Ezrat Nashim. That Ezrat Nashim was used as Ezrat Nashim for Yom Tov when there was Aliyah LeRegel, and then there were masses of people. So there was an area that women entered at the Beit HaMikdash area. So this is where the Kohen Gadol, in a sense, descends from the area of the Beit HaMikdash, the courtyard, to the area of the Ezrat Hashem, which has Kedusha, but a lower level of Kedusha, and there he reads the Torah. And I remember the Rav several times asking the question, oh my gosh, why couldn't he read the Torah in the sanctuary, in the Beit HaMikdash? Why couldn't he read it in the yard, the chatzer of the Beit HaMikdash? Why does he leave the confines of Beit HaMikdash to read the Torah? And it is a typical answer. The Rav says, I don't know. But there's one conclusion. I used to say that a lot. I don't know the answer, but there's one conclusion. What's the conclusion? That Torah doesn't have to have a specific location. And then out of nowhere, he says, you know, there's some people who think that you can only study Torah in Eretz Yisrael. What's wrong with my shir? He said this. He actually said this. What's wrong with my shir? And I was startled because I talked to him about it afterwards, exactly what he meant. He was taking a stab at those who felt that there is no authentic Torah study outside of Eretz Yisrael. And the rough point was the Kohen Gadol demonstratively left the highest place of Kedusha for a lower place to teach us that Torah can be studied anywhere. That's not the point where you're studying the Torah. So the Kohen Gadol indeed leaves that high point and goes to the Ezrat Nashim and he reads from the Chumash. Now, what does he read? So in source number 4, the Mishnah tells us that he read from Acharei Mot, what we do on Yom Kippur morning, and then he rolled the Torah from Acharei Mot, which is in Sefer Vayikra, and it's not a long roll, to Vayikra Kav Gimel Parshat Emor, which is the section of the Chagim, which includes the few psukim about Yom Kippur. But then there's another station in the Torah about Yom Kippur, and that's Sefer Bamidbar, Parshat Pinchas, which is the Musaf. We use that for the Maftir. And it's not a rolling, or what you might suggest, why don't they just take out another Sefer Torah? He read that last part by heart. And he said, Yoter mima shekarati l'shnechem katuf kan uve'esor b'chodesh ha'pikudim korei alpeh. more than what he just read in the text, on the parchment, he now read by heart. And this excited the Rav. Why should he read this third section, Ba'al Peh? This led the Rav to an entire discussion that the Avodah that was done by the Kohen Gadol in such great detail actually is somewhat deviant from the exact order the way it's presented in the Chumash, in Parshat Achrei Mot. And this is done as a deliberate step. The Rav pointed out that the Rambam will use the word seder, order, only in certain locations, where he wants to make the point that if you do it out of order, it's as if you didn't do it. One of them is Shmon Esrei. The Chazal say, Shmon Esrei brachot tiknu al ha-seder. So you have to say the Shmon Esrei in the sequential order. And the Gemara Masechet Megillah Yudzayin even explains the connections from one bracha to the next. The Rav said it also with regard to Seder night. The Seder night has to be in order. It's not that the grandmother, the Bubba, the Safta, calling it Seder. The Halakha calls it Seder. It has to be done according to Seder. And that's why poems were composed for the population, like in the likes of Kadesh Urchatz, Karpas Yachatz. By Ganusvi, if you look in the Haggadah of Rav Kasher, the Haggadah Shlema, you'll see 13 different songs of the order, because it was important in different communities that everybody had a handle on the Seder. And the one time that the Rama also uses Seder is with regard to the Seder of Avodat Yom Kippurim. It had to be done exactly in order. So if he would have done it exactly the way the specifications of the Chumash, he would have ended up changing his clothing and going to the mikveh fewer times that he was supposed to do this. We have a tradition that he will change his clothing 5 times, and before and after changing of the clothing from the regular Kohen Gadol uniform to the white Kohen Gadol uniform, to the regular Kohen Gadol uniform, to the white Kohen Gadol uniform. And this was done because any activity in Yom Kippur that was done by the Kohen Gadol, which was a regular activity, he did with the regular clothing called the Bigdei Zahav, the golden clothing that had the choshen and the ephod and the tzitz and so on. Those activities that were uniquely Yom Kippur were done with the white, the bad. And that's why we wear a kittel, by the way, to remember that. And if he switched the clothing 5 times and he had to go to mikveh and wash his hands and feet each time before, that's 10 times. Well, if you go through the Chumash, he's only going to have to change the clothing 3 times and wash 6 times. So in order to somehow get him to change again and change again, we had to have some deviation. What does that mean, we had a deviation? That the shovel of the Ktoret was deliberately left in the Kodesh Kodashim, and the Kohen Gadol made a special trip entry into it to bring it out that would force him to change again and change again, and therefore it adds up to the 5 and the 10 that was required. Who said we have to have 5 and 10? The answer is the oral law, the Torah Shabbat Peh. And the Rav quotes his great-grandfather, who he was named after, Rav Yosef Dov Ber Soloveitchik, known as the Beis HaLevi. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhina Yeshiva, later to become the Rav of Slutsk, and then the Rav of Brisk, Brest-Litovsk, and begins the dynasty of Brisk of the Soloveitchik family. The Beit HaLevi explains that there are 2 chagim of Matan Torah, Shavuot, which is the Matan Torah of the written law, and Yom Kippur is the Matan Torah of the oral law. And the Beit HaLevi based himself on a phenomenal medrash that says that on the first set of Luchot, all of Torah, what we know today of the oral law, was also written, maybe in very miniature letters, on the Luchot. Whereas the second Luchot that we chiseled out, Psolach HaShnei Luchot Avanim, only had the written law, but did not have the oral law. And this was given on Yom Kippur. And therefore Yom Kippur became the great moment of acceptance of the Torah Shabbat Peh. And that's why we had big problems with the Sadukim, the Sadducean sect, who did not want to accept the authority of our Chachamim on the oral law. And they did things differently. And there was this, and there was some Kohanim Gedolim who identified perhaps with some of the Tzedukim, who were the upper echelons of society. They were the high society people in Eretz Yisrael at the time. And that's why the members of the Beit Din of the Sanhedrin administered an oath to the Kohen Gadol on Erev Yom Kippur, guaranteeing that when he's in the Kodesh Kodeshim, he's going to do it exactly according to the tradition. And they all broke down and cried, and they cried because he was suspected. So they suspected him, perhaps, of heresy on this level. The idea that the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, is the victor on Yom Kippur. And that's why the Kohen Gadol, when he read the Chumash section of Achrimot, it was from the Torah. When he read the Chumash section from Parshat Emor, it was from the Torah. But when he read the section from Parshat Pinchas, the Musaf, he closed the Sefer Torah and read it by heart to teach Am Yisrael that reading Torah by heart is also Torah. And the Rav takes it to another level. When we write a Sefer Torah, so the parchment becomes sanctified. It becomes gufo kadosh, intrinsically holy. And anything we put around it, you know, the mantle and the wrapping, that is called tashmishek kedusha. It's auxiliary. The Rav said, when we study Torah Shebichtav, when we read Chumash, we're also tashmishe kedusha, we're auxiliary. The gufoi kadosh is the Sefer Torah itself. But he said, when we study Torah Shebaal Peh, we study Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, we ourselves become holy, gufo kadosh. We have sanctified ourselves as Sifrei Torah. And that's how the Rav understood what Chazal say as a type of hesped that was said about Moshe Rabbeinu, Safra Rabba the Yisrael. He was the great cipher. So Rav said, what do I mean? Because he wrote one Sefer Torah, maybe he wrote 13 Sefer Torah. There are plenty of cipherim out there who've also written 13 Sefer Torah. That's the big thing you're going to say about Moshe Rabbeinu? So the Rav said, no. He was the Safra Rabba, the Sofer HaGadol of the oral law, and he wrote it in the hearts and minds of every single Jew for his generation and for generations to come. For everybody. And therefore, indeed, he was the Safra Rabba of Israel. It was told that when Rav Avrom Shapira Zatzal, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkez Rav Kook Yeshiva and Chief Rabbi of Israel, visited the United States in the 1980s, he had a meeting. It was the end of the Rav's years that he was still able to receive visitors. And Rav Shapiro gave him a kiss. Now, I don't know if you know the Soloveitchik. That's not usually something that's done in the Soloveitchik tradition. So somebody told Rav Shapiro, you know, how can you do that, you know? So Rav Shapiro says, I don't understand. You don't kiss a Sefer Torah? You kiss a Sefer Torah. And this man is a Sefer Torah. And then that came across very, very clear. And it really was in line with how the Rav understood. And this is what the Kohen Gadol was doing on Yom Kippur, performing the Avodah in accordance with the Torah Shebaal Peh, in accordance with the oral law tradition. And that's why there are fine distinctions between the Rambam and Rabbeinu Tam, because in the oral law we know sometimes you can elaborate, you can explain a little bit differently here and there. We're just going to have to sit tight for the Sanhedrin and have the fulfillment of Hashiva Shofteinu Kevor Shana V'Yotzeinu Kvakila to give us the appropriate psak halacha, how Ishi Kohen Gadol is going to do it in the third Beit HaMikdash. But in the meantime, we have the various viewpoints, the various machzorim, of various nusach, of Ashkenaz and Sfarad, and however we do it, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And b'emet, it should be a shnat chayim v'shalom. The Peh Shabbat could have been Birkat HaChodesh, but it wasn't, because we don't celebrate Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. Rosh Hashanah overshadows Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. But if we would have had Rosh Chodesh, Birkat HaChodesh, we would have blessed everybody with chayim arukim, chayim shel shalom, chayim shel tova, chayim shel bracha, chayim shel parnasa, חיים של חילוץ עצמות, חיים שאין בהם בושה וכנימה, שיש בהם יראת שמיים ויראת חי, שתהי בנו אהבת תורה ויראת שמיים, חיים שמלא השם משאלות ליבנו לטובה, אמן סלע, כתיבה וחתימה טובה.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Adler. You want to take a look at the questions? There are not too many, or do you want me to tell you what the questions are? You want to take a look on your screen, on the chat box?
I see chat.
Yeah. And I can read them for you a little bit. The first question, I think it's more a comment that, of course, in the time of the Torah, they for sure didn't say the Avod in all five of the Tzilot. They davened much, much quicker. That's what you're talking about earlier. You know, they had time in the afternoon in a sort of rural society. Okay, that was, I'm not sure. I don't think there's a question there. Somebody pointed out that you say Ochila Lekel before Alkei Nekava, not before Aleinu, that the main part of Aleinu was the second half. Of
the Rav explained that. I'm going to answer that. The Rav explained.
That's why I'm asking.
The Rav explained that Aleinu is not part of Malchiyot. It's a preamble, and it's for internal consumption only. Alkei Nekaveh is the universal picture of Hashem Yimloch LeOlam Va'ed. That's the Vayashem LeMelech HaKol Haaretz. But in order for Am Yisrael to be prepared to engage in that mandate, we have to make sure that we have our in-house, everything is in order. So Aleinu Shabeach is an in-house commitment to the monarchy of God. And when that's in place, then we can go on to Malkei Nekaveh. So the Ochilu Leel is in its proper place.
Yeah, that's what we're pointing out. Yeah, okay. Someone pointed out that the Gra notes that the Pshat of the Avoda, Aaron could do the Avoda any day of the year.
That is correct. That's the Rus says that. That was a special Bizot Yavo Aaron El Kodesh, and it wasn't necessarily a Yom Kippur thing for Aaron. And only at the end of the section does it say that that in on Yom Kippur this is supposed to be done. A special, but the Yom Kippur enters into the section at the very, very, very end. And for all other Kohanim Gedolim, they are not allowed to do this. Which simply means that Aaron HaKohen could have had, if he elected to, a Yom Kippur experience throughout the year, because he was on a level that went way beyond every other Kohen Gadol. Having said that, the Rav said, you take note that in some of the Piyutim on Slichot and on Yomim Noraim, Kohanim are called Aharonim, Aarons, as if to say. And the Rav said, because each Kohen Gadol was supposed to be a cloned Aaron HaKohen. Unfortunately, history has shown that it didn't exactly work out like that. But at least on a poetic level, Aaronim.
A very interesting comment. I'm, of course, asking, the chazan can be anybody, but would there be any, the idea of having a chazan as the Kohen? Very interesting. Somebody just pointed out the Yom Kippur, based on what you said. Obviously, we don't hold like that, but...
Right. I never saw in any halachic sefer. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but I didn't see it. That means lo ra'iti eino ra'aya. But I have experience in shuls and so on. The only thing that says is that the shliach tzibur should be zaken baragil. He should be a talmud chacham. Doesn't mean of age, but it means, you know, when it says zakano megudal, that he should have a beard, I don't believe it means he has to have a beard. I think it means he has to be mature. He has to be a mature individual. And that's translated halachically as at least 30 years old and somebody who has a family and had been challenged in life with difficulties. That's more important than a growing up.